Hello, hello, and welcome to this week's Money Conversations. I am very excited to have a special guest today, Steve Chu from, well, I know him from my wife quit her job, and he's got like seven different things going on at this point in time, but I think we're going to kind of focus on the family, finances, entrepreneurship aspect, but I definitely want to give Steve a chance to talk about everything he does because he's got a phenomenal story, and I've known him for probably close to a decade now.
I would say that. Yeah, we probably met at the first FinCon or something like that.
Yeah. So, you know, he was a financial blogger, quote unquote, back in the day. And I mean, I think you've done a 180 pivot in regards to that, but you've always had some other stuff going on. And so, you know, I'm going to fail at this kind of intro. So why don't you give everyone the quick 1 minute, like what you were doing? Like and we'll dive into the story in a little bit, but like, you know, give us what you're doing, what you're working on.
Yeah. I'll give you the 30-second version. But right. So basically, I teach e-commerce over at mywifequitterjob.com, which is a blog about, it's essentially a journal of about my entrepreneurship journey. I also run an e-commerce store with my wife where we sell handkerchiefs online, which is very masculine. And that, that was the first business I started blogging about it over at My Wife Quit Her Job. That took off. That led to a podcast of the same name. That led to a YouTube channel. That led to a training class, that led to a TikTok channel, that led to an annual e-commerce conference called the Seller Summit, where I bring together e-commerce entrepreneurs from all over the world. Looks like I needed more than 30 seconds here. So
that's all right. Yeah. You know, we're live. We're sharing this out. And sorry, like I appreciate it, but thanks, Steve.
Trying to be brief, you know, just in case people in the audience don't want to hear bios and that sort of thing. But my key claim to fame, I would say, is I run 2 7-figure businesses and I work 20 hours a week.
I love that. And now, and you've also just wrote a book about it, about kind of that premise, right? The family first entrepreneur of how do you work 20 hours a week? I mean, it's Tim Ferriss, 7-hour worker or whatever it is. You're taking that, but you're doing it. You're living that life right now.
Yeah. I mean, the reason why we started that handkerchief business, just to give a little bit more background, is so that we could spend more time with family. When my wife became pregnant with our first child, she went up to me and she said, "Hey, I want to quit." Stayed home with the kids. And we live in the Silicon Valley, which is probably more expensive than San Diego, would you say, Rob? I don't know. Maybe.
It's up there. It depends, right?
So in order to get a good house in a good school district, you pretty much need 2 incomes. So I was freaking out, actually, when she told me that. And so we looked for different ways that we could make money, and we came across handkerchiefs. And that's a random story in itself. When my wife and I got married, she knew she was going to cry at the wedding, out of sheer happiness of spending the rest of her life with me. And we were looking, for handkerchiefs to dry her tears. And we could only find a place in China at a factory that got them. And we had to buy a couple hundred. So we bought a couple hundred. We used maybe 6 of them, sold the rest on eBay, and they sold like hotcakes. So that's how that idea came about.
So before all this happened, what were you doing for work and what was she doing for work? Like, I don't really know all this backstory. So
interesting. Okay. So I was an engineering director of microprocessor design. I was an electrical engineer, graduated with a master's in that. And that's what I was doing. I was very happy doing it, actually. My wife was a financial analyst for a Fortune 500 company.
Okay.
And she was making 6 figures. Yeah.
And she was like, I'm going to have kids and I really don't want to do these spreadsheets anymore. I'm guessing, right?
Yeah. She didn't really like her job too much. And in fact, like every morning we'd have breakfast and she'd literally come up to me and say, "Honey, I'm off to the hellhole. I call my job now."
That sucks. It is tough because my wife was a financial analyst too and had the same feeling about being a financial analyst most of the time. So you guys had kids, or did she quit before you had kids, or did you already have kids?
She quit as soon as her maternity leave was over.
Okay. Yeah. And then you guys were looking at your finances. Mm-hmm. But I feel like a lot of people don't necessarily pivot to entrepreneurship as a way to quit your job. Most people are like, how can like we work out, live on one income? How can we, like, you know, I be a stay-at-home mom? And like Steve, you do it, or maybe we put some side hustles together that are small. I mean, you guys like started a seven-figure business. I'm sure it didn't start as a seven-figure business, but like you started a business, which is rare.
Here's the thing. Our goal with that business was only to make $60,000 a year. That would have covered everything. And the only reason we had courage to do this is because I had a friend down the street who started an online store selling wedding favors, and that store was called Boku. I also had this other buddy who started a photography store, and he was incidentally the one that showed me how to put up the website and everything. So I had outside influences that pushed me in that direction.
No, and I love that. So, you know, you started this store. Did you buy it or did you start it from scratch?
100%? No, I started from scratch. I ended up, so this is like before Shopify. This is like before Amazon. I literally picked up an open source cart and just went with it. So it was free actually to get started.
And so you started this, you sourced these handkerchiefs, which you already did from your wedding.
Correct.
You put up an online store and you just started rolling with it. And now your wife, you have little ones though at this point in time, right? Like infants.
Yes. Yeah. So this is what happened. As soon as she became pregnant, she told me that we literally started the online store.
Okay.
Pretty quickly, actually. Yeah.
So you got things going before she had the baby. And then what happened?
By the time she gave birth and was on maternity leave, we had already hit the six-figure mark. And so that's why she could quit in good conscience.
Nice. And you were still working though this whole time.
I was still working. I continued. This was back in 2007. I continued to work until 2016.
Wow. Okay. And so she was basically running the e-commerce handkerchief business while you were working full time still, I'm assuming, right? Helping out.
We were both working on it. And let me just tell you a quick story. So my wife, part of what we sell is embroidered handkerchiefs. So we can embroider like the name and wedding date and that sort of thing. That used to be her hobby. But as soon as we started selling those, she started hating doing it. And after a while, she's like, I'm not doing this anymore. So I was doing the sewing. I would come home from work after working maybe 9 or 10 hours. I would sew for 2 hours and then go to bed in the beginning.
Wow. I mean, isn't that the story of a lot of people's side hustles though, is that they take a passion project. It's something that you liked or it was something that you enjoyed. But then once it became a business, quote unquote, you're like, I hate doing this. Like we need to find another tactic, right?
Yeah, that's why I'm a firm believer that passion actually gets in the way.
Oh, okay. Tell me more about that. What do you mean? So passion gets in the way.
Well, think about it this way. Passion is fleeting, right? You may be really into something and then it kind of goes away. Like I've been into so many things over the years. Instead of going for passion, you should go for purpose. And what kept us going was the fact that we wanted my wife to stay at home with the kids. And whenever you start any business, in this case, we sell handkerchiefs, right? But whether I sell handkerchiefs, computers or yoga mats, the day-to-day is pretty similar, right? We're making sure orders get out on time and doing customer service.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's the same in the content creation space. Like if you like writing, now I think there's a little more intersection. Like you have to like what you're talking about.
Sure.
But it's the same thing every day. Like I'm going to create something. I'm going to respond to people. You got to like that process. So I really like that a lot. But your wife sounds like she's not working 20 hours a week at this point in time. Sounds like she's working a lot too.
In the beginning, yes. But the business wasn't large in the beginning, right? When we first got started. We were running it out of our house and we could pack all of our orders at night. So in the beginning, actually, it was more like time shifting.
Right? Gotcha.
So the kids, it was just one child at the time, went down at like 7 o'clock. So we basically had, you know, like a good 3 hour span to pack orders at night. And then as we got bigger, we had employees and that sort of thing.
Definitely. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. So when you're starting out, you're working at your finances. I mean, I don't know if you want to share, but like how comfortable were you feeling before you guys left your day job? Because I think a lot of people aspire to, you know, going to a, you know, one person stays home with the kids, one person works. And I know you have a hybrid approach, but like, how'd your finances look at that point in time? If you want to share, you can be vague or you can was comfortable. Like, because like, I think it's a risk, right? Like people are like, I can't make that leap because of money, right?
So it wasn't that risky. Like I'm not really a risky person. We were just in Vegas together. I didn't really gamble actually. I'm just not that type of person. So if all went to hell, we could have lived on my one salary. And worst case scenario, she goes back to work. Which would be like the ultimate worst case scenario.
Okay. So you guys kind of were thinking about this prior to that. Like, what were you doing? Like, did you have a goal in mind? Were you budgeting? Were you saving a certain percentage of your income? Like, what did that like lead up to like being comfortable to make that choice look like?
Yeah. So I think the first thing that you got to do is you got to figure out how much you're really spending in a year, you know, whatever lifestyle it is. And then if you have a business, you pay yourself that amount first, and then psychologically the rest is gravy. So that's why we had that goal of $60,000.
Gotcha. So you kind of live that pay yourself first, which is now like a book or a profit for profit whatever first.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a whole book about this, but the idea is you pay yourself those living expenses first so that you can know exactly what you got. So you had this goal, you hit that goal really fast. You know, what led you then? I guess you said you worked till 2016. So this is 7 years ish, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So,
what was your inflection point?
Okay, I liked my job. I actually enjoyed going there because I was working with all these really smart people. In fact, like the stuff I designed is still on like every iPhone today. Like the technology takes care of like the noise cancellation. Anyway, so I wanted to start something myself that could just make some extra money. And so that's why I started my blog over at My Wife Quit Her Job. Reason why I started that was because of this one post that I read back in the day by this guy named Steve Pavlina. And this post was called How to Make Your First Love Dollar. And at the time, he was doing $4,000 a day in AdSense. And I was thinking to myself, that's a lot of money. I can do that by writing posts. And that's how the blog got started. And actually, friends were asking me how we started this handkerchief business too. So I documented it for them. They didn't read it though. None of my friends read it, not even my mom. And then just random people started reading it. And that's how it took off.
And I mean, at that point in time too, it was a little bit more like personal finance driven, a little more like it didn't have the like full e-commerce drive it has now, right?
Well, I was throwing everything at the wall. I was talking about personal finance, investing, raising kids, e-commerce, everything. Uh-huh. But the e-commerce was the stuff that resonated with everyone the most.
Yeah, I mean, because you were doing it. I think people do aspire to people that are like actually doing the business and then like doing it instead of talking about what to do. And then like you wonder if they ever actually.
That's true. There's a lot of that today.
There's a lot of that today. And I think people can snip that out. So, you know, what was the precipice though? You said you liked your job. So there had to be some kind of inflection point that you're like, this just doesn't make sense anymore to stay at my job.
Yeah. So, okay. So the blog didn't make any money for like the first 2 years. By the third year, it made six figures. And then it just kind of hockey sticked after that.
And then what were you making money on at this point?
Oh yeah. So I was making money on affiliate offers. So I was recommending e-commerce products, SaaS products, which paid out pretty well. And I sold a course, which I started in 2011. And then I was doing some advertising as well.
Okay. Yep. And that just continued to grow until you reached this point where you were like, I'm good. Like,
it was a gradual process actually. So I was making like maybe 8X my salary. And so I went up to my boss and I still liked the job. I was like, hey, can I go down to 4 days? And he was like, sure. And then like, you know, 3 months would pass. I'd be like, can I go down to 3 days? And then 2 days, and then 1 day.
Wow. Okay.
And then at that point, my boss left and I got this new boss who pulled me into the office and said, hey, what do you do here exactly? And I was like, I'm your insurance policy. Cause I was one of the main three designers on the main product that was making all the money. Uh-huh. So if anything breaks, like I'm here to consult, but I'm going to be straight up. I don't really do anything day to day. And that was it. I was out.
And then they cut you loose, or did they say like, you need to decide if you're going to come work or not?
They didn't cut me loose. They said, we need you a minimum here of 3 days out of the week is what they said. And I was like, I can't do that. It just doesn't make financial sense. And so I left.
Nice. And so in this lead up, were you very transparent with your boss and like what you were doing? Like, did they know you had the site, My Wife Quit Her Job? Or was it like an unspoken secret? Or what did that look like?
It was not a secret. And in fact, I had negotiated at one point, like I can work on my stuff at work.
Wow.
But I had to attend all meetings and everything, you know, like that. I was like, of course, that sounds great. So by the time I went down to 1 day, I was working my own stuff and there to answer questions.
That's awesome. Cause I think that's also another dilemma that a lot of people face is they start seeing some success and, you know, it might conflict with their employer. right? Like it's yes. not a welcoming kind of thing. And, or it's like a lot of employers today too, like they lock down all the equipment, right? Like you can't even like go to Google on some work computers, you know, because it's like so filtered. So let alone do your own stuff, but you also legally probably don't necessarily want to do your own stuff on a work computer, right?
I mean, in the beginning, I was not at all. It was okay. only towards the end when I was kind of on my way out that I talked about that. So yes, I wasn't really doing anything at work in the beginning, of course. That would have, and it also helped that nothing I was doing directly competed with the company that I was working for either. So gotcha. Yeah, it was basically nights and weekends.
Wow. Okay. So your book though now is like you just said, is you're working 20 hours a week, but we're at this point right now, at least in your story, that you are working this day job and now you're leaving it and you're sewing your own handkerchiefs at night.
Well, that was very beginning. This was like 2008.
Okay.
Yeah, until we hired people. Yeah.
All right. So then what's 2016 look like? So you're at your job. Like, I'm guessing you didn't get back all the time that your day job was. Like, I'm sure some of it got sucked up, but like, what does that look like?
So 2016, it was like so super cushy with the blog because, you know, content scales really well. So I was just writing one blog post a week. And I think I had my podcast. So I was doing one podcast, one blog post a week. And I had these really good email sequences where the traffic would go through this funnel and then people would sign for the class. So the blog actually didn't take all that much energy. And meanwhile, the job in 2016, I was only working one day a week. So I had all this free time.
So what were you doing?
What was I doing? I was helping out with the store also. Don't forget, there's the marketing arm of Bumblebee. So the way we split it, and this is just if anyone wants to work with their wife in a business, I usually advise against it. Just because you're going to clash. So we separated out so that my wife was in charge of just the day-to-day stuff and the operations, which I'm not good at. And I was in charge of the marketing, which meant running the ads, working on the content. So I was doing content and ads for Bumblebee Linens. And then I was doing my blog posts and course.
I like that because, you know, I work a lot with my wife. And so, yes, you have to have these boundaries. But then one of the stories that always resonated with me that you told me at one point in time is you're doing the marketing and then you hit like a lever that was super successful and like sent all these orders in. And yes. your wife is like, dude, what are you doing? What are you trying to do to me?
What most people don't realize is that when you grow quickly with an e-commerce store, it's actually not fun at all. Because you actually have to deliver those orders and you need people. And unless you're going to maintain that pace for a long time, it doesn't make sense to hire. So you're right, Rob. I would do this killer ad campaign. And basically, I treat my store like a lab, right? I try these new strategies and see if they work. And then I write about them. It's like, it's like a symbiotic relationship. So like every now and then, I'll hit something that like increases our sales like 3x or 4x for a short period. And then we get into a fight.
No, I mean, it's a positive and a negative at the same time. And you're just like, what? I'm sorry that I'm successful. Like, what do you say to that? Right.
Well, we actually made this agreement that we don't try to grow the e-commerce side more than like low double digits every year.
Okay. That's
because, you know, we're doing it for lifestyle, right? It's not like we're trying to become like an Amazon.com, for example.
Nice. So let's fast forward a little bit to closer to today. Like, how did you scale down your work? Because, you know, through this story, you know, you guys are putting a lot of effort in and it sounds like through various means, and maybe you can share them. Like, how did we scale that to be a much more lifestyle driven business than like all in, right?
I think one of my main philosophies is only to work on things that can scale really well based on the amount of work that you do. So this is why you won't really see me on social media that much. My friends who do social media well, I have this one friend who does Instagram really well. She posts 7 times a day. I have this other friend who makes millions of dollars on Facebook. She posts 21 times per day. And if they stop posting, the traffic stops. And I don't like that. So I focus on things that have long-term value, like SEO. You write one blog post, get traffic for a long time. I have posts that I wrote 10 years ago that still generate traffic. Same with YouTube. I have videos that I posted 3 years ago that still generate tons of views. And I actually don't like employees either. I used to be an engineering director. I had lots of direct reports. And just managing the personalities, most people don't consider the overhead of that as well.
Absolutely.
So I would say that if you want to start like the next Amazon.com or something really big, you probably need a team. But if all you want to do is make a couple $1 million, which is more than enough money for a lot of people, you can get by with maybe just like one employee or even by yourself. My wife quit her job.com generates $1 million in profit. And I just have one VA in the Philippines. It can be done.
And that is creating that long-term content that like lasts quote unquote forever. Well, as long as it's relevant, right?
And then, relevant.
Right. And then you're pushing it towards courses and affiliates is I'm guessing, right?
That's correct. Just like your model, Rob.
I know. Yeah. I know. I'm here for the viewers and the listeners, man. I'm trying to pull these nuggets out for them. Right. Yeah. But then I see things like Bumblebee Linens and like your conference, like literally requires people. I don't know if they're employees or how that works, but like there's a dude there like running the AV. Like, so you're not all these like there. So like, let's talk about Bumblebee Linens. Cause like you said you hired people. And I know that's a different business than an online business, which I love online businesses, but like, how'd that work? Like, how did you, where'd that scale to?
So let me tell you this. I often get asked whether you should go into content or start an e-commerce business. And what I always say is if you want to make money within a year, then I think e-commerce is a good way to go. If your runway is like 3 years or longer, I think content is the way to go. So with Bumblebee Linens,
can I asterisk you really quick right there?
Yeah.
So content is the way to go over 3 years, but we just had some long conversations about how AI is going to change the content game. Is that still where you stand? I don't know.
I still think that's true because my YouTube channel, which now makes, it'll probably make between 250 and 300,000 on just AdSense alone this year, was something that took me 3 years to get. And that was very recent. Literally just the last 3 years that happened.
Yeah.
I think with any content, it just takes time to build that audience, right? And the AI discussions we had to do with SEO, right? I think SEO is going to get disrupted.
So written content potentially. But when you're talking about content creation in general, there's still a lot of opportunity, whether it's video, audio, live streams, different mediums, right? Like, is that kind of what your premise is?
I think so. Anytime you can express your opinion or your personality, I think those aren't going to get disrupted for a long time.
I agree.
Yeah. You know, writing just happens to be the easiest thing to get disrupted, I think, right?
It does. But I think also, I think it's a holistic cycle because, you know, some of your success is driven by the fact that you're an operator as well. And you have like Bumblebee Linens. And like, so your writing, I think, gets more credibility than any AI content in general, because you're credible because you do it. And so it's like, to me, it's like this giant like circle, right? Like you build credibility through all your other stuff that improves the value of your written content. And I think people will still read that, you know, maybe it does get scraped by AI or something, but you know, I think still people will read that, right?
Yeah, I agree. It's the wild, wild west though. Who knows what's gonna happen?
I know, right? Or Spynet's just going to come after us all. Yeah. Who knows?
What
all
was
right,
the original question, Rob?
The original question was, now you scaled My Wife Quit Her Job with a VA only in the Philippines. But Bumblebee Linens is very different in e-commerce. And I think you have employees there, right?
Correct.
So, so what was the premise there? How does that work? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah. So at the time, like e-commerce was our only thing. And, you know, once we grew to I can't remember exactly how quick when we did this, but we had to hire our first employee because I didn't want to sew anymore, right? So we hired one person early on just to take care of the sewing responsibilities. And we ran it out of our house, I think, for a good couple of years, and then it made sense to move it out. And today we have three employees. And I just think in a physical products business, this is before Amazon, where you need to ship out your own orders, you needed to have employees and a way to do it. Today, however, the landscape has completely changed. Amazon will handle your fulfillment and your storage for you. There's all these 3PLs, which are fulfillment centers, where you can send your products and then they'll store and fulfill them for you. So today the landscape's different than when we started.
Interesting. So like, is there one model that's better than another, or is it more of a personal preference or a cost savings preference? I have to imagine that, you know, there's pros and cons to everything, or why would you have employees, right?
Yeah. So in our case, we do personalization, which involves someone running a sewing machine, which is why we need to do our own fulfillment. If we didn't have that aspect, we would probably use a 3PL or a fulfillment center. It just all depends. So the advantage of doing your own sewing and that sort of thing is that's just yet another barrier to entry if someone wants to copy you, right? Like who's going to buy like six, $10,000 machines and start embroidering, right? Barriers to entry are much higher.
So it makes sense, right? Like if I wanted handkerchiefs, like I can go to a plethora of places to get handkerchiefs. But if I want embroidered handkerchiefs for my wedding, I don't really have a lot of options, right? Because of that barrier and that personalization, and you have a shop that does it, right?
Yeah. So it's just, you have to weigh like the long-term benefits between ease of use. Like a lot of people are attracted to, oh man, I can get started with this so easily, or I can get started with this with no money. But when that's the case, that means millions of other people can do the same.
Interesting. So then now we have like a third vertical here, which is like your conference, which I feel like from, I know several conference organizers is a lot of work.
It is.
So like, where'd that come from? And you know, how does that work? And I'm sure there's got to be someone that helps you run that as well.
So the conference is not a moneymaker. I'll just say that up front. The only reason I do the conference is for community. And by myself, I never would have launched one. So I have a partner, Tony, and we made a deal where she handles all the logistics of the conference itself. And I'm only in charge of tickets, sponsors, and speakers.
You love that marketing side of things. I get that vibe.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's same with your wife. You're like,
what I'm good
you
at,
handle,
right?
You handle the operations and I'll handle like the other stuff.
Exactly. And so, yeah, we like, I don't like large events. So one of the reasons why I started this event, because on my bucket list, I wanted to be a keynote speaker somewhere, but no one was asking me, Rob. So I started my own event and I asked myself to be the keynote. And there you go.
And now, and then has that propelled you to be speaking at other events?
No, I do speak at other events, but no, I still haven't tried to get a keynote. Maybe once this book comes out, but speaking was never really like something I really wanted to do. I just wanted a bucket list item. Like this book is a bucket list item. I don't know how many books I have left in me.
Okay. Well, so like, let's kind of pivot now and, you know, talk about this family first entrepreneur. Am I getting that right?
Because
like, it sounds like you've been there and we've had like this story arc of how you got there and whatnot. Like, let's talk your book. Like, give us the 1,000-foot view of what this is about.
Yeah. So I wrote this book, Rob, because I feel like most of the entrepreneurship advice out there is wrong. And the reason why I feel that way, it's because most entrepreneurship advice is given by single dudes who have no responsibilities, right? For most people or people like us, we have families and we can't afford to work like 80 hours a week on something, right? And totally. The general, I guess, ethos out there is like you need to work 80 hours a week in order to have a successful business. That's absolutely not true. You can have a business and work 20 hours a week and have plenty of time to spend with your kids and with your family, as long as you adhere to the principles that I describe in the book. And we've kind of discussed some of these already.
No, I love that because I think that's also been one of the biggest criticisms of maybe entrepreneurship over the last decade, kind of like thinking holistically is like this hustle mentality, you know, all this kind of vibe. And I see a lot of it. So we talk a lot about, you know, side hustles, you know, small time entrepreneurship. And one of the biggest feedback objections I get is, you know, I have kids, I'm not in that season of life, like I don't know where to find the time. And so I do think that there's a lot of value in what you're saying, that it is possible to do it, but you have to think about it differently than these guys that are just out there grinding and, like you said, 27 Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook posts a day or whatever it is, right? Like it's very different.
Let's just talk about something you just said right there. You said people make the excuse that they don't have enough time. I always call BS on this because I waste so much time during the day. Like I'm watching Netflix. There's so many things that you can cut out if you really want it. That excuse is really whether you want it or not. And the way I always teach it is that you shouldn't just quit cold turkey. Just do something on the side while you're working. And it could just be something that you're interested in, right? I have this buddy who likes this video game. So he started a YouTube channel about the video game and it ended up picking up traction. And he makes, you know, $1,000 a month off of it. And you never know when that side hustle based on something that you're either knowledgeable about or interested in could take off and potentially be a full-time salary.
I love it. I mean, I was just before this, like wasting time. I was on Twitter and then Mr. Beast is posting today and he's like, what would my 16-year-old me think? And he's like, I published like 150 videos that got like 0 to 17 views before like anything hit. And it was just like 16-year-old him playing video games in his thing. Yeah. But now look at the success, right? So I think you're wholehearted. One of the things I always talk about in finance too is, you know, a lot of people say they can't do something. I'm like, show me your time and show me your money and I'll show you like where you're missing. And I'll tell you in my challenges, I've probably challenged 100 readers over the years that have thrown that excuse my way. Nobody's taking me up on the challenge. So like, let's look at your calendar and your budget and we'll can talk about it. But no one wants to talk about it because I think everyone does know deep down inside that like I am wasting a lot of time doing silly things. But like you said, maybe it's a value set thing. Maybe I don't value that enough and I value watching Netflix or whatever it happens to be, right?
I think that everyone needs to have some sort of purpose, right? So my wife was going to quit her job in order to stay at home with the kids. I wanted to stay at home with the kids too. That was our purpose, which guided everything. You have to want it, really. Yeah. And if you want it, you'll find a way.
So how many people do you think are using work as an escapism from their families and kids too?
I can't answer that question, but I will say this. There were weeks where when I was working full time, when the kids were super young and they were just crying all the time and I wasn't getting any sleep, that Monday morning was nice sometimes.
And see, right? I think that also is the thing too, is that, you know, I see people, especially like at school functions and different things. And it makes me wonder, you know, like I have a very similar mindset to you. My wife and I do, we're here for our kids. We probably attend like 98% of all their functions and stuff. And, you know, as a result, you see the parents that do versus the ones that, you know, clearly aren't making it. And then some of those, though, you wonder is like work the escapism and do they really want to have this lifestyle where they're there with their families first versus like being the guy at work? Or I always think of like the George Clooney up in the air guy, you know, that's yeah. Like that's their identity, right? I don't know.
I will tell you this. When I was young, my parents were first generation Chinese immigrants and they came here with no money. And they worked hard to put me through school and support me and everything. But whenever I had like a sporting event, I would look over on the sideline and sometimes they weren't there and that affected me. So I just want to make sure that I'm present. And let's be clear, you can't hang out with your kids all the time. You'll drive each other crazy. But I think it's important to just be there in case they need something or just to know, let them know that you're there and available for them.
Yeah. And just to support them and cheer them on, right? Like that's it. So we talked a little about time management. I don't know. I don't want to reveal all the principles of your book, but like, what are some other key tips that people can do that are in this season of life? I guess, you know, there's probably some different seasons too. So like, I feel like when you have infants, you're in like one season of parenthood, then they grow up and they go to school and you're like in another one where it's like they go somewhere for 6 hours a day, which is, it gives you a different, you know, season. And then I think you're getting closer to this than I am, but like you get in this teenage years where like now they're almost starting to get more independent. It's a little different. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts there?
On the seasons of life?
Or like in entrepreneurship and how it works, like when you have young kids versus school age kids versus,
I think when your kids are super young, that's when like the best time is, ironically, to start something because they can't talk. You're just changing diapers, right? Yeah. And they're napping.
They go to bed at 7, take a 2-hour nap, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then I don't know about you guys, but when my kids would wake up in the middle of the night, I'd just be sitting there holding them and I could do work and it's quiet in the house. That's like the best time to actually start something. As they get older, you know, that switches and changes a little bit. And let me just tell you this. I think starting a side hustle or a business is the best way to maintain flexibility in your life, right? You can time shift stuff as we did early on. And this full-time job that you have, chances are will never make you life-changing money.
I couldn't agree more with that. You know, especially today's world, where you can do things anytime, really. Like, you know, that there's no real clock if you work for yourself, because like the world, you know, yeah, we have a live stream set or a call here or different things, but like no one's knowing if you're fulfilling your package at 6 a.m., noon, 7 p.m. Like they don't know, right?
Yeah.
Like you can do whatever you want to do, right? So like what other tips do you have? Like if pivoting, I guess the biggest thing is, because I would assume that people kind of fall into a couple buckets. You don't have kids yet, kids are here, or you already have kids and a business and you're trying to pivot your mindset to I'm working too much and I want to spend more time with my family. Like, do you have any thoughts on like making that pivot?
Well, I think you talked about a bunch of different scenarios there. I would say the best advice we already kind of talked about is to figure out how much you spend, pay yourself first.
Yep.
The rest is gravy. Because once you know how much you need, so one thing that a lot of entrepreneurs get carried away with is that once they start making money, if you're not used to making money, your ego starts going nuts and you want to just make more of it just for the hell of it, right? I fell into this trap where we were making money and I just wanted to grow. And I was setting these insane goals where once we hit them, I was like, okay, great, we hit it. We'd enjoy ourselves for like a day. And then I'd set some insane goal later on. And it got to the point where my wife was like, she like broke down. She said, I don't want to do this anymore. Why are we trying to make all this money when we don't even spend hardly any of it, really? And that's like an ego thing that I think a lot of entrepreneurs have, right? Once you start making money, you just want to grow it. Like we want to grow things.
Yeah.
And it's working with that ego that, I mean, I can tell you how I dealt with the ego. Let me just tell you a quick story first. I belong to this group at Stanford called the Mayfield Fellows. And there's a lot of high profile guys in there, like Kevin Systrom's a member. And the goal with that program is to start a multi-billion dollar business with the VCs. And so we have these annual meetings, right? Where we go in and everyone's like, oh yeah, I just had a $400 million exit. Oh, I just got funding for $100 million. And when it comes to my turn, I'm like, yeah, I'm still selling handkerchiefs, right? So that, like, I feel ashamed isn't the word, but I feel like I don't belong.
Yeah,
and so
that,
like, my ego starts going nuts and I have to quell that ego somehow. So the way I do it is I just work on one thing every single year and I don't care about the money. I just try to do it well. And as long as I'm learning, it's great. So this year it's about book launching. So I hired a book coach and I've learned a lot about the industry. Last year it was YouTube and I managed to grow that to over 200K subs. The year before that, it was TikTok. The year before that, I think it was Google Performance Max ads. And that just keeps my ego in check. I'm always learning
that.
Something. Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, you have the two sides of it. You said your ego, but then it's also like this lifestyle creep. I see a lot of people getting themselves into trouble as well because you have a great year and suddenly you have the more expensive house and the more expensive car and like your baseline just continues to rise.
Yeah.
And, you know, now all of a sudden you find yourself, you know, your monthly, you know, you're just like, I just needed to hit 60,000 a year and you'd be good. But like, it's pretty easy to suddenly be at like $15,000, $20,000 a month in expenses.
Oh yeah.
If you let your lifestyle creep up and now all of a sudden you find yourself needing to make $500,000 a year, because if you spend $20,000 a month after taxes, yada, 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 like that's the kind of numbers you have to hit. And then you got to keep doing it. And then if you creep up even more, it starts to be a real problem for people.
Here's a fun fact. I don't fly first class. I actually refuse to fly first class because I don't want to get used to flying first class. My wife, without letting me know so much, booked me on first class on my leg back from one of these conferences. And I went on it and I was like, there's nothing special about this at all. I hope you didn't spend much money on this. But anyways, yeah. I'm very conscious of lifestyle creep. I don't need a lot of things. I prefer experiences.
I think that's great. And so I think you said it. It's like goes with ego and it goes with some solid budgeting habits, which honestly, I think very closely tie together. Like I don't need the car. We were a one car family forever. It just became a logistical nightmare. So we finally like gave in and we both like racked ourselves. Like, why are we buying a second car? Like, this is terrible. Yeah. And it's like, cause I work from home. Like, I don't want to go anywhere. If I didn't have two kids, I probably could still live with one car forever. You yeah. know, but I think that's a big one. The ego one's very interesting. But I also think, like, you know, one of the things that stood out to me is you said you're in this group, and I think it's you are it's very good to hang out with these people that like surround you, motivate you, push you. But I think, you know, having this dynamic of being okay with yourself, I also think, you know, a lot of them probably are a little envious of you, and I don't think you realize it, that they're like, this dude over here selling handkerchiefs, but like only works 20 hours a week, like versus these guys that are crushing it. I don't know.
I really don't know. I mean, these people are younger too. So, you know, everyone has different priorities.
Yeah.
It could be the case. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
But it seems so glamorous, right? You know, when they're making that much money and getting funding.
So. I always see too. Yeah. Getting funding, having these exits. But I also think of some of these people, like they get these exits and, you know, you didn't realize that like they diluted themselves down. You know, they end up with like, yeah, $5 million or something. That's great. But that doesn't necessarily change your life, right? And then you got to hope that things perform for a long time to maybe have that grow further. I don't know.
Well, I will say this. So I belong to a bunch of mastermind groups, and I do, and I've interviewed over 450 people on my podcast, Successful Entrepreneurs. And I will tell you this, is that a lot of them are miserable and stressed out, and they actually don't see their family much. But on the outside, they're doing really well. I'll give you a quick example. There's this one dude I interviewed where he hit $2 million in like 6 months. And the whole episode, we were talking about how he did it. And, you know, it was like a very uplifting episode. As soon as I hit the stop button, I was like, man, how sucky was that? This is an e-commerce business, right? He's like, dude, it was so stressful. Like I almost died, right? Because like all these packages come in, like you're hiring people really quickly. And, you know, it's never fun to grow really fast, but you don't hear about those stories.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's why, I mean, going back, I think your book is definitely very valuable in that regard to try to help people reframe the conversation, at least if that's their value set. I do, again, worry that it might not be the value set for everybody, but for those that do want that to be in their value set wheelhouse, like how can you move to a place and maybe have some validation from Steve here that, hey, it's okay. Like you don't need to kill yourself. Like make enough money to provide for your family and save for yourself and go from there. Right. I don't know.
Well, I'll just say this. Fundamentally, everyone wants the same thing, right? They want the freedom to spend time with the people that they love and freedom to do what they want. Right.
Yeah.
That's why most people start businesses. Most people don't start businesses wanting to be the next billion-dollar company. Right.
Right.
And so the thing to realize is that your job is probably not going to get you there. And you need to start something, a side hustle, to just kind of have even a chance of that happening. Do it on the side. And that side hustle could potentially become something big. Everyone should have that same ethos, I think. Whether or not you want to use that time to spend more time with family, it doesn't matter. The key is you can make a couple million dollars if you want with something that does not require a large staff and does not require a ton of money. And that's more than enough for everybody.
I agree. I think it even starts sooner than that. It's, you know, starting your side hustle can first build you to like a place of financial security, right? Maybe an emergency fund, things like that. Then it can build you to that next place of like some go to hell money, right? So maybe you still have to work, but like if your boss or your company or whatever is just terrible for you, you've built yourself a cushion to get to the next thing. And then yes, then I think, you know, next level, right, is like, how can we build enough to give ourselves even more freedom to do what we want to do that aligns with our values?
Let me just tell you a quick story here. So when I started making like 8 or 10X what my day job was, I started getting really bold at work. So like the boss would be up there and he'd say something. I'd be like, that's not going to work, man. That's not going to work. But what was funny is I was emboldened to say all these things. And that's when I got promoted.
Steve, that's my almost exact same story as well. So when I was at Target and like, I was like the assistant manager and like, dude, I was getting shafted on these interviews and different things. And I just couldn't seem to make it. And so like that, you know, I was really diving in on the side business, creating the College Investor, started making a lot more than I was making at work and started not caring. And I started just sharing all these different things. And then all of a sudden they're like, dude, this guy's great. Like we're going to promote him. We're going to do all this stuff. And then I started caring even less and getting promoted and going out and doing all these other crazy things. And it's like, it reminded me of the movie Office Space, you know, where like they're, you know, they're doing the layoffs and he like undoes his cubicle. It's just like, what, you're going to fire me? Like just doesn't care. And then you just keep getting promoted and promoted and promoted. But I do think you also get a level of confidence that clearly must exude through the workplace you right. know, in a way that like you can't even you it's subliminal, but it like works for you, right? I guess.
I mean, I was brought up to just work hard, and if you work hard enough, people will notice you. That's what I was taught. And yeah. that's absolutely not the case.
Not at all.
Yeah.
It's all politics and drama, especially once you get past a certain point.
Right.
And you know, there's a lot of value in being an independent thinker that just does your own thing, right?
Yep. So there's a lot of these intangibles, right? When you start your own side hustle that go way beyond money.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you taking the time with me today, Steve. Like, why don't you, I'm going to throw your book up here. You can pre-order it. Give us the rundown on like where we can find this thing. There it is.
Yeah.
Boom. You know, where can we know it? When's it coming out? Give everyone the details.
All right. So you can find the book over at thefamilyfirstentrepreneur.com. And it comes out May 16th. And to just make it a no-brainer, I'm giving out a bunch of free bonuses that you get immediately after you pre-order the book. So the first one is a three-day workshop on how to start a print-on-demand e-commerce business. This is where you create designs that go on t-shirts and mugs and that sort of thing. And then someone else does the storage and fulfillment. And you probably, just to be upfront, you probably aren't going to make life-changing money here, but it is one of the easiest businesses that you can start with no money at all. Get your toes in the water, get used to selling online, and that will always lead, it's like a gateway drug to a bigger business. I'm also giving away a two-day workshop on how to make money with content. I podcast, blog, and I have a YouTube channel, and I'll teach you how to make money with those three channels. I'm also doing a six-week Family First Challenge. This is where I'm getting really interactive in a Facebook group, where I will help you figure out what your next side hustle is going to be. And I'll be with you guys every step of the way for 6 weeks. I'm also doing these little book parties where the book will be your ticket. But you get those bonuses as soon as you pre-order the book over at thefamilyfirstentrepreneur.com.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Steve. I love it. Thanks so much for being on the show today. And I look forward to checking out this book more in depth. And it's near and dear to my heart. I love where your mindset is with this. I think it is a solid mindset for people that value their family. You know, I think a lot of people talk the talk. They say like, I value my family. Well, this book will help you walk the walk, hopefully take some action steps there. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate you taking the time. And for all you guys watching, listening out there, check us next week for the next Money Conversations here at The College Investor. Thanks, guys.